education.
Not incarceration.
We want education.
Not incarceration.
We want education.
Not incarceration. We want education. Not incarceration. We want education. Not incarceration.
My name is Lester Spence, LesterSpence. I'm here because I kind of study this for a living, this dynamic, this neoliberal turn. One of the consequences of the neoliberal turn is the increasing incarceration of adults and increasingly of children. So I'm here for kind of electoral reasons, but also I've been a political supporter of Occupy Baltimore since they took McKeldin Square, and I'm a supporter of the Occupy movement in general. And then finally, I am here as a parent. I have 5 children. I have 3 black boys. And to the extent we can identify very specific populations that are most likely to suffer from the school-to-prison pipeline, it's young men of color, young boys of color, predominantly African-American, but increasingly other communities are being caught up too. So I'm in it. I also believe in this because I have a personal stake in it, given my children.
Can you describe exactly what has gone on here today and what's happening now?
So one of the ways that Occupy, I think, has been really, 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 really good at changing the conversation is by using innovative public demonstrations to raise awareness. And what we see today is kind of 101, like a political demonstration 101, right, where we take us place. And if you were to look at it, if you were to drive by it, it's just an empty field. Well, now they've placed a fence around it because they knew folks were going to occupy it. But it's just an empty field. So people drive by this every day not knowing what it was planned for, not knowing. But once these people are here, once we're here and once the signs are up, it becomes a political thing. It becomes a political space. And at that point, it becomes a contested space. And that's what Occupy is doing, right? So they've built a temporary school building on the base of that, on the site that the youth charged as adults, quote unquote, prison is going to be built. And at some point, what will likely happen, probably with the cameras up, is that the police officers who are here or the state officials who are here are probably going to tear it down. And just that symbolic moment when it's captured, you know, with video, you know, with real video, with cell phones, once it sends and goes viral, you can live in China, right? And not speak a lick of English, but you see them tearing down a school, you know what that signifies and what that symbolifies or what that represents. So that's what's going on here.
What is the importance of this happening on MLK Day? If any.
I wouldn't be here if it weren't for the people in the civil rights movement. But what I'd say is that we're 44 years removed from his assassination, approximately 45 years removed from the civil rights movement. And what the civil rights movement has become is kind of a symbolic look backwards, right? And at best, we talk about what King's, you talk about the more radical aspect of King's speech as far as, you know, him talking about inequality and whatnot, but very rarely, particularly in this moment, do we see people actually engaging in real civil disobedience. Not a march where you get it, you know, where you get a, you know, you fill out a form and you get a permit and you know, no justice, no peace, and you kind of go back home. Like straight up civil disobedience. This is not what we want, and we're willing to go to jail for it. That's what the symbolic importance of it was. Another aspect, and this is something I mentioned in the speech, is that King himself didn't really live to see the world he created. And when he was engaging in activity, when Fannie Lou Hamer, Ella Baker, Rosa Parks, Joanne Robinson, when all these people were engaging in activity, they engaged in it not knowing, and in large part, not knowing if they would ever see the day. You know, so they did it for the kids. They actually didn't do it for themselves. So to that extent, another way that it's appropriate that it's today, another reason why it's today is because most of us, we engage in these fights for I mean, what? You're maybe 15 years younger than me. About what? You like in
20s? I'm 26.
Yeah. Yep. 15, on, almost on the dot. Right. So even in your case, the changes that you're fighting for, your kids will see the benefit. It's not like you're going to get the hookup from this stuff. So to that extent, that's what we all do, and that's another reason why I support.
You also participated last week in eviction defense. What do you think is the importance of the Occupy, like, meme using these type of direct action protests?
While I understand the more symbolic stuff that was the first stage of it, or what I understand is the first stage where they took over public space that wasn't necessarily contested in the same way, there's something to be said for engaging in direct action that directly impacts people's material lives, right? So with the foreclosure defense, there are a number of people in places like Baltimore and surrounding suburbs and people all across the country who can viscerally understand the idea of buying a home. It's your American dream, you do everything right, and then they take it away from you, right? And it's wrong, right? They can viscerally understand that. So when people see people who don't necessarily have our politics, people who might not have politics as long as a day is long, when they see that folks, a group, an organization like Occupy are fighting for them, they can say, wow, you know, this is about me. You know, this is about me. They are fine. And then they can see the world in a different way, right? The same thing with the, in fact, it's even worse, because I would actually argue, so foreclosure directly affects homeowners. The school-to-prison pipeline affects everybody, right? I mean, it really, everybody's either got a kid that's connected in the school system or is indirectly paying for somebody who's in the joint. Right? Or is buying a house in a neighborhood because they want to be sure that they're sending kids to the school that isn't a prison. So when Occupy moves to these type of material issues, it increases the scope of the it increases the range of the movement, and it increases the depth of the movement, because there are probably people who are involved with Occupy who understand wealth inequality, but don't really understand in a deep way how this plays out for different communities.
When you first began your speech, you said that you were tentative about giving the speech because you didn't want to be the black man on the mic. Can you explain what you meant by that?
it was deep, because the foreclosure thing, there, it was actually more racially integrated. It's now racially integrated, but when we started, it was predominantly white. There were two levels to that. So one is that I'm critical of the role of charismatic authority. Even as I am a charismatic authority and a charismatic speaker, right? So part of it was that, you know, because this movement is deeply democratic. And even though I've been involved, I haven't been involved in an activist sense. I've been involved in kind of like a support sense and intellectual sense. And I didn't want to be up there, you know, particularly two times in a row where people see me, you know, and there are other people doing quote-unquote real work. So that's part of it. But then the other thing is the racial aspect of it. And as much as, even though these are black issues, there is this tension with between black activists and some white Occupy activists about the quote-unquote racial nature of Occupy. And I, even though the people who, the put it this way, the people I directly intersect with, you know, Casey, Jessica, Mike McGuire, Iris, you, a few other people, I will do pretty much anything you guys tell me. I said this to Casey, I said this to Jessica. But at the same time, I was like, okay, I'll do that, but there is this, I don't want to be there, you know, anytime, it's, you know, and I know that's not what they're doing, but I wanted to at least say it out loud and put it out there so people other than, you know, Casey and Jessica and Mike, who thought about these things, can at least consider them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. What do you think the importance is of, in taking in those issues that you just said, what do you think the importance is of having the Baltimore Algebra Project endorse this? Or do you think there's problems in it not being organized directly from them?
So this is the thing now. Okay, so, and this is worth fleshing out and thinking about. So at the outset, and you've heard me talk about this before, I actually made a claim that Occupy was more integrated than people gave it credit for. Mm-hmm. That is the not only as far as people or being involved in it, but the concept itself was a concept that could easily, that other groups could easily use. I mean, there was a moment at the outset where you could have had like 10 Occupy Baltimores, you know, and nobody could have stopped them, right? So I thought that there was this racially inclusive thing there in the Occupy concept that people weren't giving credit to. And I still believe that. But here's the thing now. The real issue isn't necessarily about the makeup. The real issue is that there are resources that Occupy has through its connections with progressive activists with histories and progressive activists with money and histories that know that other groups don't necessarily have access to. So to the extent that those groups tend to be predominantly white, that's where the racial challenge is. And that's something that it was a conversation with Mike that actually made, even though I'm a political scientist, it was a conversation with Mike McGuire that was like, oh my God, I've been missing this. And that's something that it's going to take more than a group giving, you know, giving support to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, what? How do you think we get beyond that?
Like, it's not about. So, for example, it's not about necessarily saying, "Well, you guys don't organize and let us do this." But it's about somehow. I have to really think through this. How does this work? It's about us figuring out how to spread the resources that we have to other people who don't have our connections. You know, and not in a way where it's a broker deal, right? Where it's like, okay, well, listen, I got a hookup. I'm going to call my boy. And, you know, it's about, no, what has to happen for people directly to be able to go to these sources or create their own sources where they don't necessarily need us or they don't need you or they don't need Mike for the hookup. That's something that I have to think about that some more.
Just a couple more questions. Okay. Why'd you bring your family here?
Why?
Yeah.
See, and that's deep. So the way I'd answer that is to say, as deep that you asked me that question, given the issue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are all types of people here with families. I mean, well, Occupy's kind of younger, so you guys got brothers and sisters rather than children. But some of the older people have kids. You know, they have kids. You know what? You should probably talk to one of them and see what they think about it.
I would love to do that.
Hey, Niara, you want to get interviewed?
What do you think about all this?
This is not a democracy!
I think it's really important that people are really risking, you know, like being arrested to fight for their rights.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How would you describe what's going on here right now?
I describe as determined to get their rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all the statements that they know they're gonna go to jail, but they know that if they'll go to jail as long as they can fight for their rights.
Are you glad you came?
Yes.
Do you have anything you want to say?
I'm very cold.
You're very cold. Thank you. Do you have any final statements you'd like to say?
You know, I said this at the march, and it's the thing that's worth reiterating. We don't know what's going to happen here. We don't know what's going to happen with this issue, whether it's going to have an effect at all. But it's about creating the space and the opportunities for change to happen in the future and in different ways. We can't predict. So here's the way this stuff works. I'll give you a real simple example. I created this group called the Baltimore Mixtape Project to produce local, politically progressive hip hop around this school to prison issue. The impetus for the project, I gave a talk at a event called Ignite Baltimore, right? The nature of the event isn't important, but before me, or after me. There weren't that many black people at the event, and only like two or three black people, including me, who spoke. The guy who spoke before me was Heber Brown. a progressive pastor here, progressive young pastor here. He was the one who, he talked about this issue. I had no idea it existed. Out of that conversation, and then out of me reading I Mix What I Like by Jarrett Ball, put out by AK Press, I came up with this idea. If you would have talked to both Heber and Jarrett, who I both know now, they would have never have predicted that an organization like this would come out of this. I mean, Jarrett just wanted to write a book, and Heber just wanted to talk to people about this issue. They had no idea what specific type of changes would come as a result of that. That's what I want to drive home. We can't predict the nature of change. We don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know the form it takes. But the only way it happens is if we continually push the borders and expand people's conception of the political.
Not incarceration!
We want education!
Not incarceration!
We want education!
Not incarceration!
We want education!
Not incarceration!
We want education.
Not incarceration.
We